Hi guys, I'm Dana Al-Hanbali and this is Something to Consider. Today we welcome someone whose journey has been defined by building. Businesses, ecosystems, opportunities, and now conversations. For over a decade, Lulu Khazin has played a pivotal role in shaping the MENA startup landscape. She founded and exited Nebish.com, the region's first merit-based freelance marketplace, co-founded Kickstart Studio to help non-tech founders bring ideas to life, and launched Kickstart Ventures to back early-stage startups. Today, through Spade Ventures, she's not just investing in businesses. She's investing in people, ideas, and the future of entrepreneurship. But her story isn't just about what she's built. It's about how she's changed. Lulu is in a new chapter, one where she's embracing uncertainty, creative risk, and stepping into spaces that she never really saw herself in before. Her podcast, Conversations with Lulu, is now one of the top business podcasts in MENA and ranks in the top 5% globally. But for her, it's more than just a show. It's a learning platform, a space to bridge knowledge gaps, to challenge the narratives we've been told, and to offer practical insights that help others build, not just dream. And in many ways, she's building herself. Over the years, she's learned hard lessons about trust, conviction, and the price of following through. She's become more selective about where she spends her time, who she invests in, and who she actually believes in. Because building is personal, reinvention isn't always a choice, and impact, it isn't always loud. So today we're diving into what it really means to evolve, how we reconcile with the past, how we redefine trust, and how we step into what's next, even if we don't have all the answers. Lulu, welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Absolutely. I'm happy to have you. Lulu, I usually like to set the context of the show with an opportunity for you to actually kind of lay the foundation of where we start. If I asked you, how do you want to set the stage for this conversation in terms of giving us a little bit of background around you, what do you want us to know?
Well, we can talk about, you know, the thing that I'm really excited about at the moment, which is you know, shaping future generations, shaping mindsets, having deep and meaningful conversations, and you know, this sort of new chapter that as you pointed in your introduction, that I'm embracing with a lot of uncertainty, but also with a lot of excitement. So I think, you know, I've built a business, I've built a family, you know, now I'm building something that hopefully will have a lasting impact and more influence on the next generations of women, of business leaders, of entrepreneurs, of young people.
You know, one of my favorite things in terms of what you do has to be the way that you almost document a large part of your journey online. And I think you've invested a lot in that on LinkedIn over the past couple of years. Do you feel like that is something you've always been able to do, kind of articulate what stage you're at in your journey? Or is that something you've kind of taken ownership of now as you start to your point, build more impact, share more insights?
So I never looked at LinkedIn as, you know, some people look at it as a way to, you know, become a thought leader or as part of some broader content strategy. I never really looked at it in this way. I share on LinkedIn whenever I feel I have something meaningful to say. It's usually something I've come across during the day, a conversation I've had that sparked something in me, someone who really upset me. You know, something that happened that I feel that there's a lesson out there or there's something worth sharing. I'm not for sharing just for the sake of sharing and filling airtime and basically just, you know, putting it out there because I need to put something out there. It's more around sharing something that I really feel would benefit people. I shared yesterday about my experience of recording my first podcast in a very big event and how, you know, how it all happened. And it was really a behavioral stretch for me from like the beginning to the end. And I think that's very important because people don't often, you know, they often stick to one identity their entire lives, or they don't necessarily test their limits. And I wanted to tell people that, you know, as cliche as it sounds, once you get out of your comfort zone and you test your limits, you get something really interesting at the end of it. So I shared this experience with the goal of, you know, telling people that Everybody does it. Even someone that you think is like quite established or successful or however, you know, people see me or see other successful people. Even we are like getting our own comfort zone every day, you know, and doing something new every day. So why don't you do it as well? It's not like we've made it and we don't have to do this anymore.
How did it feel though?
Do the behavioral stretch.
Do the behavioral stretch, be outside your comfort zone.
Yeah. So for me, it's normal, right? It's become, I think looking back at my life and my career, I've reinvented myself probably 5 or 6 times, like completely reinvented myself. And some people, again, really get intimidated by change and worry about it, get stuck. For me, I sort of embraced it and, you know, it comes at a cost. It's not easy, right? It's extremely mentally challenging. It's physically challenging, sometimes very stressful. But for me, it's like the only way, you know, if there's a path for me that's somewhat working, I just say, okay, time to move on and do something different. So I've embraced that. So it comes naturally to me. Again, do I get scared? Of course. Do I get self-conscious? Yes. Do I think, most probably I'm going to get rejected? Yes. do I think, I might make a fool of myself? Yeah. I mean, and I've made mistakes as well, but so what? Right. So I don't care, at this point. Maybe it comes with age, with maturity, I don't know, but I think it's always been getting out of the comfort zone and doing something new, and doing that behavioral stretch has always been something that I've had for decades now.
I love that. I love that because there's such a kind of raw vulnerability to that. I want to take a step back to early in your journey. I feel like the Nebish story is something that's, you know, very well known in our region, because in a lot of ways you were able to do something very early on in a category that was still emerging in our region, which I think is incredible. Yeah. But really what I want to talk about is the exit, not in terms of the details of it, but I want to talk about this idea of an exit being equated with the ultimate success story, mm-hmm. which in a lot of ways it is.
It's not. It's the end of a chapter, right? Like any chapter in your life, you've built something and you've exited, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a company, you know, whether it's whatever. So it doesn't mean an exit doesn't necessarily need to mean success. It wasn't a big financial exit, so I don't see it as being, financial success. It's the end of a chapter. There was a ton of learning out of that experience, and I would never do it any other way. But that's it. It's the end of a chapter, and then you move on to the next chapter. Mm-hmm. But sorry, you wanted to ask something on that.
No, I feel like you touched on it, but I want to delve into that a bit deeper. There's an attachment that comes with building something. I love that you equated it to a relationship, because I think a lot of people don't realize that. There's the ongoing joke of it's not personal, it's business. But I feel like as an entrepreneur, it's incredibly personal.
Oh, absolutely.
So how do you, in all honesty, I went through something very, very similar. And I feel like a big part of my identity was tied to the first company that I built. So while, you know, it was something that, you know, at the time it was the right decision and I wouldn't change anything, it was a complete journey in itself to figure out how do I start to redefine who Dana is if Dana is not the person that built this company. So I'm curious, did you go through a similar experience when it came to your identity after your exit?
Look, I was always a builder, and that's my identity. So irrespective of what I'm building, I'm the person who's building. I'm not Nebish. I'm not Spade Ventures. Maybe I am Conversations with Lulu. It has my name on it. But I don't define myself with these ventures, because they are ventures, right? And they might succeed and they may very well fail. And it's normal. Obviously, I'm telling you this like 20 years later. So if you had asked me this question 20 years ago, I wouldn't have said that. But you evolve, right? And how you define yourself and how you see your identity also shifts. For me, identity is very fluid. Like, you know, one day I'm the entrepreneur. I mean, look at me today. One day I go to a conference. One day I have my founder hat. One day I have my investor hat. One day I have my podcaster hat. At home, I have my mother hat and my wife hat. So it's always evolving and changing. So to answer your question, did I define myself by Nebbish? Not really. I define myself as someone who's building things and who enjoys the process of building things and getting people together under the same mission and doing something that has impact. So was it a difficult period after Nebbish? Yes, of course, because there was also COVID, which just compounded things, right? It got very lonely at some point, and that's why I started the podcast. Because the idea is like, okay, let me bring people that are super interesting to me, that I think are building amazing things, and let's get the rest of this, because I always say like we're in entrepreneurship, we're like this bubble, this little bubble where we think like we're the best thing in the world, but we're not. And I thought, you know, people outside of this bubble need to know more about what's going on in this entrepreneurship bubble. So that was the sort of the genesis of conversations with Lulu. That and a lot of questions in terms of, okay, what do I do next? What do I build next? Who do I want to be next? And let me test this thing out. Let me have conversations with people that I really enjoy talking to offline, and let's bring those conversations online anyway.
Mm. I love that. You talk about, I've read before that you've referred to whether it was Nebbish or your other ventures. And I love how you talked about being a builder and a builder has multiple ventures, but you talked about it as almost, you know, one venture is the end of a sprint and you are just continuing a variety of different sprints with each of your ventures. I would assume that you are consistently in pursuit, which can get quite exhausting.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. This is a curse. This is not a good thing. Look, it's, I am always in pursuit. It is exhausting, but it's what drives me at the same time. It's like a blessing and a curse. On the one hand, nothing is enough. There's always what's next for me. But on the other hand, if I wasn't like that, or if the experiences of my life didn't get me to be like that, then probably I wouldn't be where I am today as well. Does it come at a big mental cost? Yes. The toll of it, you know, the toll of always being in pursuit of something, of the next thing, of building is quite stressful. It has a big toll on you emotionally and even physically. But I couldn't do it any other way, right? I mean, that's how I'm built. I don't know. That's how I function. I try to slow down sometimes, but I can't. My default is action.
What do you think makes the pursuit worth it, though?
Learning. I mean, I love to learn and discover things. I'm a very curious person, and that makes things very interesting for me. And again, I like to challenge myself. Like when I started the podcast, I mean, I know nothing about podcasting. I don't even come from the industry of media or journalism or anything like that. I didn't know what equipment to have. I didn't know what I needed in terms of talent to support me. And I'm like, okay, let's do this. And I put out the first episode and I didn't think it was great, by the way. But whatever. I mean, I want to pursue this. I want to see how far this can go. And I always, there's a good friend of mine. She's a producer. She comes from the TV world. And she always used to send me her comments, like, you know, the framing is this, you should sit up properly, and all these things. And yeah, okay, great. But ultimately, that's not what's going to make this podcast successful. What's going to make this podcast successful is the, you know, me working on myself, becoming a better interviewer, a better conversationalist, getting amazing guests, extracting like some really interesting insights from them, shaping people's opinions, people who are listening to the podcast. I think that's what's going to make it interesting and not really the details. So if the details aren't there, like it doesn't look amazing, fine, so be it. You know, it will look amazing in 5 years. And here we are today. It does look amazing. And people get stuck in that, in the detail, right? It's not great. The volume, the sound's not so good. The quality of the mics is not great. Who cares? Mm. Really, who cares?
But when did you start to feel, especially from the perspective of purpose, because you talk about your podcast as quite literally, I don't even want to call it a learning platform. It's an insight hub. I mean, you're sitting and you're having these intimate conversations with people that have also built things, yeah. Have gone through their own challenges. When was the point when you were building Conversations with Lulu where you started to feel like I'm onto something and I feel like this is something that is going to change my purpose?
Mm. Maybe about probably in... towards the end of 2003. Mm. So what was that? That's like, so yeah, 3 years on or four.
2023.
Yeah, sorry, I said, yeah, 2023. yeah, this is, I think, maybe 3 years on or more, slightly more, when I felt that, okay, this is really becoming quite a big platform and this is worth me putting more time in and investing more time in. And I think that's, you know, that's, one thing I've actually decided to double down on recently, which is putting my focus on the podcast. I never really saw myself as the podcaster. I saw myself more or identified more with, let's say, the entrepreneur and the investor. And I think podcasts are extremely powerful platforms. And yeah, and I think it's worth putting all my focus in it and to see how far it's going to be. And that's where, you know, the fear kicks in, right? Because if I put all my focus on it and then it fails, then, you know, then that's usually what scares me or what scares people away. And then, but then you're like, okay, we're going to do it. I'm going to take a bet on myself. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Works as in, obviously, my vision for it is way bigger than what it is today. Going back to it's never enough, what's next that we just touched on. So
it's interesting because when you put it like that, the act of building in itself is quite a humbling experience because you're constantly putting yourself in check and questioning, are you good enough? Are you worth it? Is what I'm producing good enough? Is it worth it? In the conversations that you've had with the people on Conversations with Lulu, where do you feel like there has been kind of a thread of similarities in a lot of these leaders? Because a lot of them, to an extent, I mean, I assume you do have a filter with the way that you choose people that you're speaking to.
Oh, yeah.
So all of them, to an extent, have checked multiple boxes. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the common thread that you found in having these conversations with these people?
I think a lot of them, or probably all of them, are genuinely really good people. I'll come back to your question, but I just wanted to do a short segue. I did an event at my house and I invited all of these tech leaders and entrepreneurs who were on the podcast. Most of them have been on the podcast or I've met them through different walks of life. And I also invited some friends that are not part of the ecosystem. And the feedback was from the friends that are not part of the ecosystem is that, wow, these successful, like super successful people are very cool and very humble. So they are very, like builders are very humble. Like you need to be that to be able to build. You can't say, I know it all. Actually, you go on the premise that I don't know. And you build on the premise that I'm going to learn this thing and I'm going to crack this thing as I go along. Of course, you as a builder, you are relying on the building blocks that you've already built in your life, right? Like the skills that you've acquired, the experience you've acquired, the challenges, the ups and downs that you've been through, whatever personal experiences you've had as well. It all kind of comes in as a building block and then you build on top of it. But when you're building, you don't necessarily know, right? You don't have all the answers. I think you're just good at asking the right questions. So the people, the common thread, I think, that of the people who have come on my podcast is they are genuinely good people. They are humble. They are building. They are solving while building, and that keeps them. You know, I think, in my opinion, makes them very interesting people.
Mm. Interesting.
Like they haven't reached the peak yet. They're still on their journey.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to sum up what a healthy group of people to be around in general.
They are really fantastic. They are amazing. I think people get, you know, some people think, I'm sick of listening to this. Oh, I built my business. I sold it for $1 billion. And they're so arrogant. And it's like, no, that's actually, no, it's not. It's not. They're not arrogant. Like, you need to get to know these people. They're actually super nice, very interesting, very humble people.
But you said something very key. You need to get to know these people, Ludo. Mm-hmm. And if I'm being very honest, especially, you know, especially after coming to a market like the UAE, where, you know, you get access to incredible, incredible overachievers in every sense of the word. Mm. There are people that are very much stuck in this mindset of I am my accomplishments. And what's interesting is that when you do invest the time in trying to get to know the people behind these accomplishments, the accomplishment itself is the least interesting part. It's important and they deserve all the credit and validation for it. But it is the least interesting part when you start to understand what it took, what kind of person it took, what kind of lessons come with that. And that's an incredible thing to see. It's an incredible thing to be open to. And for me, changed my perspective in terms of the way that I interact with people. I hate the question of what you do. Tell me about your job. What do you work? Like, I just find them to be very superficial in the world we live in today, where, mashallah, to an extent, everyone is in pursuit in their own way, whether business or otherwise. On that note, though, I don't know how much into pop culture you are, but there was a conversation that was trending recently, and it's very relevant to this conversation. There was this, it's award season now in the States, and there was the SAG Awards, Screen Actors Guild, and Timothée Chalamet, who plays Bob Dylan in a movie, gave a speech after he won. And I want to quote this speech. He said, "I know we're in a subjective business, but the truth is I'm really in pursuit of greatness. I know people don't usually talk like that, but I want to be one of the greats. I'm inspired by the greats." Mm-hmm. That kind of ambition, that unapologetic kind of, excuse the term, no bullshit attitude is something you see a lot in creative industries. So I've heard it a lot. I actually talk about it in my own business a lot. I'm an advocate for greatness. But I also see it as something that exists in entrepreneurship and with investors because, you know, they seek impact on their own terms. So the people that we usually consider the greats in businesses, it's not because they built the business. It's because they left something much bigger behind. They paved the way. They shaped an ecosystem. They developed a legacy. So when you think about one, I would love to know who the greats are in the way by your definition. And two, how do you feel like this is something that plays into how you shape your own path?
Okay, that's a long question with a few things to unpack. Look, when it comes to the greats, I mean, again, I think a lot of them have been on my podcast. There is a very strong filter in terms of who makes it on the podcast. So I believe a lot of the people that I've had on the podcast, I'm actually deeply inspired by, whether it's their personal journey or their accomplishments. Again, their accomplishments are having built a business here in the UAE, having built a tech startup. I can tell you it's damn hard. So you cannot dismiss that. It's a big achievement. And I think people that are not entrepreneurs don't understand how difficult it is to build a business and not only build a business, but succeed at that level in this part of the world. So I think you can't dismiss and you have to celebrate these achievements. Again, their personal journeys and what it took, as you said, to get them there to where they are today. And again, they need to be people who are inspiring in their own way. There's something about them. I don't know. Sometimes you can't put your finger on it, but there's something about them that is exciting or inspiring or gets you to sit down and listen to them. And they have presence. They have agency. So I'm not going to name names specifically because I think there's quite a lot of people in my circle. I'm very blessed to have some really amazing people in my circle that I find extremely interesting, and they are great. On Timothy Chalamet, why not? You know, I think it's refreshing because we've kind of gotten to a place where this kind of fake humility, right? Like, I'm humbled by this, award, or I'm humbled by, I don't know what, just let's drop this. Okay, everybody wants to be great. I mean, tell me a person that doesn't want to be great. Whether they are, I want to be great. I want to be a great mother. I want to be a great wife. I want to be a great fitness person. I want to be a great businesswoman. Who doesn't want to be great? It's what you do, right? To get there. Some people say, I want to be great. And that's it. That's where it ends. And then their life is a disappointment because they don't live up to what they say. Mm-hmm. It's what you do to get you there. So in Timothy's case, I think he's doing pretty well for himself. So, but even him, I'm pretty sure if you'd ask him, if you ask anybody that looks successful on the outside, I'm pretty sure they have their demons, and I'm pretty sure they're battling with things.
Absolutely. I have no doubt, but I think that there's a difference. Look, everyone's definition of great, I think, is relative to the context of their life and their own life experience. But I think, going back to your obsession with pursuit, people that are in pursuit of greatness, Muhammad Ali, when he talked about, I am the best, there is no one like me, it takes a specific type of commitment, discipline, and dedication to get there. Not everyone has it. And I don't think it's...
accountability.
It takes account. Can you speak to that?
The accountability?
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, people always, if things are going great, you say, I'm great. If things are going bad, you try to blame everything under the sun for you not making it, right? And I think people need to have agency, so they need to have the power on what they do and the choices that they make, but they also need to have accountability to say that, you know what, this didn't work because 1, 2, 3, and this is what I've learned. So that's equally important.
It is equally important. And I'm curious, you working with early stage startups, is that something that you see a lot of?
Which one? Agency or accountability?
Accountability. Well, I feel like agency comes with accountability, but really it's accountability. Because to your point, I just want to build on that. To your point, we do live in an era where we do, you know, we're quite literally breeding a new generation of ambitious people that are in pursuit of more, whatever more is. And I think that's great. But I don't think everyone understands that there's a great level of accountability that you need to take on for the choices that you make in the life that you are building, whatever that comes with. So when I look at, especially entrepreneurship, which is, has become kind of such a sexy buzzword. Everyone has become an entrepreneur or calls themselves an entrepreneur in some respect.
They're called wantrepreneurs.
Oh, is that a term? Yes. Is that a, yeah. It's funny. I was having a debate
they
with someone.
They want to be entrepreneurs.
I was having a debate with someone around this, around being someone who excels at a skill and someone who is an entrepreneur. And they were trying to equate them with being the same thing. And I was trying to explain that's actually, one, I don't think that's fair to say. Two, it's completely false because an entrepreneur invests in building a system, or at least that's how I see it. So with early stage entrepreneurs, especially because, when you talk about Spade Ventures, that's who you want to invest in. Do you see a lot of accountability, or is that an issue that you see with early stage entrepreneurs?
That's an interesting question. I mean, when you are investing early in entrepreneurs, when they are in the early phases of building their business, you want to test for accountability probably in relation to how they see like their previous achievements, right? So how the choices that they made and how they rationalized those choices. And this is where you can, tell a little bit if they do feel accountable for the choices that they've made and what happened to them, or basically if they think that things happen to them without obviously them having an impact on it. So whether they made the decisions or whether things happened to them. And I think it's a different perspective. It's a different framing. So you want the former, right? You want to get the entrepreneur that basically has ownership of their decisions, understands why they took the decisions, even if those decisions were not the right ones. Mm. But they are, you know, they stand by those decisions and are accountable for them. Now, were there learnings afterwards? Yes. And that's where also you see how adaptable the person is, how agile their mindset is, and how they might deal with problems as and when they arise in the future, because they will arise. And you want someone who has that agility in how they think and accountability for their decisions.
As an investor, though, in these entrepreneurs, do you think a lot of the insights on the entrepreneur come from their backstory as a person or come from their experience in building the business? Because, and I'll let me reframe that, because why am I asking this? Early stage entrepreneurs, I find it's a lot of, there's so much weight in the story versus the product and kind of the success of the product itself. Yes. So that's kind of the context of why I'm asking.
The story is extremely important, right? I mean, you have to be a great storyteller. I always say it, you have to be memorable as an entrepreneur. It's very difficult to get people's attention, whether it's customers, investors, team members, especially in the early days, if you haven't made it yet, if you're still in the early days of building. So you need to have a very strong vision. You need to be able to articulate it really well, and you need to be somebody that people want to work with or invest in or advise. So I always say, you know, being memorable is very important, because I meet so many people, and I'm not even like one of the big investors here. I mean, you have venture capital investors that meet thousands of people throughout the year, right? So what makes you so unique? What makes your story so unique? Why should they invest the next, you know, hour with you to listen to what you have to say? And beyond that, why should they even give you money to your business? So it's your story is, especially at that point in early stages where you haven't built yet the business and you're selling the vision, the backstory is very, very important, right? Why are you doing this? What motivates you? What are your values? How do you manage people? How are you picking your co-founders? How you are picking your team members? Why did you choose this investor? All of these are signs and signals that tell you more about the person. And then at that point, you can decide, you know, am I make a bet on this person or not? Because it is a bet at the end of the day. No one knows who's going to fail. Even serial entrepreneurs that have built successful businesses will probably build the business that will fail. It's not, obviously it's way more de-risked than somebody who's never built a business, because they've been there, they've done that, they've gone through the learnings, they've probably built networks, they probably have people around them that they can rehire and help them build their second business, etc. But yeah, it's even successful serial entrepreneurs don't mean that they're gonna succeed at every you know, next or future business that they're gonna build. So yes, your backstory is very important. Why you're doing it is very important. How you present yourself, the story that you tell, is very important. Mm-hmm. If you're memorable, this is very important.
You know what's interesting? Your entire journey, especially now with what it is that you're investing in now, and not in terms of businesses, but in terms of time, conversations with Lulu, gathering these insights, you want to impact the startup community, you want to build an ecosystem, you want to invest in early stage startups. It's almost telling me a story that there's so much of you giving back or putting effort into something that I wonder how much of this support you had. And I'm wondering if all of these pursuits are in response to the support you didn't.
Yeah, well, you hit the nail on the head, as they say. Look, I've always, like from a very, very young age, I've always had to do things on my own. I didn't really have a lot of support growing up. And I do these things because I know no one's coming for me. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't have expectations from people. I learned that, how did we get here, by the way? What did you ask me? I've learned that Yeah, I've learned not to have expectations from people, and I've learned to rely on myself to get things done. And if people show up, great. But the expectations is that they want. How does that translate into what I do today? Yes, I do. I think give back a lot. I am trying to put more brakes on my time because I think people don't appreciate time. People will appreciate if you give them something, money, I don't know, something tangible. But they don't appreciate time. And that really triggers me now. The amounts of people that, you know, message me and email me and call me and WhatsApp me wanting to sit with me and pick my brains or get my thoughts about this or that. I think, yeah, I think people don't necessarily have respect of someone's time. And time is like, you know, my 1 hour with you is the culmination of nearly 25 years of work and of networks and of experiences and so on. This hour is super, super valuable and people put like zero value on it. So So yes, I do give back, but I'm becoming more and more selective with my time and who I spend my time with and so on. You want to learn about entrepreneurship? Go listen to my podcast. I've interviewed 91 fantastic people who have built amazing businesses. There's like a ton of insights there. So this is a way of giving back. I am investing in entrepreneurs. This is a way of giving back, but I think beyond that, I need to put more boundaries, basically on what people ask, because as you said in your question, who's coming for me, right? Like who is going to support me? And because I support myself, which is something I've done for the longest of time, I need to be more selective with what I put my time in.
Hmm. I have so much respect for that. I have so much respect for you having enough respect for yourself to value your time that much and filter out what you don't need to spend your time on.
It didn't come in easy, by the way. This is something I've had to learn because maybe it's a cultural thing, but in our culture, in the Arab world, you can't say no to people. It's difficult, especially if someone needs your help. Like you need to be there and support them. And maybe this was ingrained in my mind. But now I'm realizing that no. I mean, I don't have to support everybody and help everybody. I do have certain channels that are accessible to a very large number of people. But beyond that, I can't. I simply can't. If I have to sit down with every person that contacts me, then I can't do anything for myself anymore.
Listen, I recognize how difficult it must be to, quite frankly, stand up for yourself enough to the point where you have to put those boundaries, okay? Totally respect that. And I'm not even arguing that. But I think there's something to be said about this idea, and you touched on it, there's no one coming for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you are not constantly in the cycle of pursuit, then will you be worthy of anything else? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's what you said. I'm wondering. I feel like a lot of the time, these are isolating conversations, at least I've had with myself as an entrepreneur, because a lot of my self-worth was defined by my output, what I was able to give others. It's almost a metric I can measure, whether it's through the conversations, the things I've done for free, where I've gone beyond my own capacity because I just want to quote unquote give, because giving is good, to your point, in our culture. And that's a good thing. And bilax, I'm a giver and I'm a this, and da, 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 until you realize that you're not getting anything in return.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is that I think this as a premise is valid, but I think it can be quite isolating when you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
I know you've also spoken about entrepreneurship being a lonely experience.
Very lonely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is very lonely. I mean, it's difficult. You are carving your own path. You are trying to figure things out along the way. The majority of people around you aren't doing the same thing in their lives. They have their stability, their jobs, their you know, whatever path they're on. You're doing something different, and that leaves you open, right, for questioning, you questioning yourself, people around you questioning you. It takes a lot of effort. So yeah, it is, I feel like it is a lonely journey. It's not easy.
But don't you think at some point loneliness becomes a choice, Lulu? I'll build on that. Ever since moving here, I love so many things about this city, but ever since moving here, I've become part of so many micro communities, a lot of which are centered around entrepreneurs who are quote unquote like me in terms of the experiences that they've had. Yes, maybe I have people that I can talk to where we can share experiences and learnings, but those insecurities, isolated conversations, isolated thoughts, loneliness, it still exists. And I've almost gotten to a point where it's conscious. And what's interesting is I heard very recently, an ex-CIA agent was actually talking about it. She was talking about if you consistently live your life feeling like there is no one like you, no one understands and no one is going through what I'm going through. No one understands me. I am the only person experiencing what I am going through now and forever, and no one will ever understand me. Rest assured, that'll always be the case. And I'm not assuming that, you know, your experiences are not unique to you, but at some point it does make me wonder how much of this narrative is something we impose on ourselves.
I mean, first of all, I didn't say that I'm the only one experiencing the things that I'm experiencing. I think everybody is going through their own journey, and everybody is experiencing ups and downs and so on. Lonely doesn't necessarily mean like you're not around people. I mean, I know so many people, and I'm constantly around people. So lonely is you kind of battle your own demons and your own insecurities and go through the very difficult, basically, challenges that you go through when you are building a business or when you are building something new. It's not necessarily lonely in the sense that I don't have people around me or I don't talk to anyone, or that's actually not the case. But I do feel that as much as I can, I want to solve my own problems. I mean, I do talk to friends sometimes. I talk to my husband a lot. I have some mentors that I can pick up the phone and talk to as well. But for the most time, I try to figure things out alone, on my own.
I think you
that's what I mean by lonely.
And I agree.
Not lonely as in socially lonely.
No. And I agree with that completely. But the point that I'm trying to make is that even amongst people, that feeling of isolation and loneliness still exists. Mm. So if we all know that it exists and we all know that we're going through it independently, I know it, you know it, Flan, whatever, everyone knows it, and we're all sitting in the same place, but we're not able to lean on each other in these cases. That's what I find strange about the idea of loneliness and entrepreneurship. I think it's a sort of phenomena. I don't know if it speaks to the way that we see ourselves. I don't know if it speaks to a specific personality type that maybe as an entrepreneur you kind of innately have. I don't know, but I find it an interesting phenomena, an interesting premise.
Yeah.
Something to consider.
Something to consider.
Okay. You talked about mentorship. You've talked about mentorship multiple times, actually. Do you really believe in mentorship?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you don't know all the answers, right? And and like I said earlier, when you are building a business, when you're building something new, you're figuring things out along the way, especially when you are stretching yourself, getting out of your comfort zone and doing something completely different. So it's good to have people around you who have maybe been there, who have walked that path before. Maybe even it's not the same path, but a similar path. People maybe who are older than you, who can bring in a bit more experience, but also, what's the word I'm trying to find?
Perspective?
No, they sort of... Anyway, I can't find the word. But yeah, people who have walked a similar path, people who can maybe support you with a connection, support you with an idea. Yeah, why not? Talk to people. I mean, you might be onto something, but you might be going in a completely different direction. And you might talk to somebody that might ask you a question that gets you thinking and say, oh, hang on, maybe that's not the best way I should do this. So mentors are very good. Not only, they're not there to tell you what to do, by the way. They're like a therapist, you know, they're there to ask you the right questions, to make sure that you're doing this for the right reasons, and to help you along the way, you know, whenever they can. They're not going to build your business for you. They're not going to give you all the answers, but they're there to support in certain areas.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I feel like when it comes to mentorships, one of the reasons that they don't work comes from not knowing why you need a mentor, in my experience. Not knowing what you want and seeking advice or guidance can be a challenge.
It's like therapy, right? When you go to therapy and you don't want to change, or you don't think that there's something wrong, or you don't think that there's something that you need to work on, you go there and you don't actually change or work on something or introspect or do whatever you do, end up doing in therapy. And I think it's the same thing for mentors. People are busy and people have a lot of priorities and you are not their priority. So you need to get that in your head. If you want someone's mentorship, A, you need to know what you want from them, ask them the right questions and respect their time. I'm not here to chit chat and have a coffee. You have a specific question for me, ask me and I will answer. You have an ask it and maybe I can help. So I think the reason maybe why mentorships don't work is because people don't know what they want. And they go there to this very accomplished person, assuming that, you know, the mentors are probably ahead of you in life, or maybe not, even if they're friends. And you go there and you just waste their time. If you don't know what you want, if you don't know what value you want to get out of them, they're not going to be able to help you. So... it's you, accountability.
What do you like to do in your free time?
I like to spend time with my kids. I like to run. I love my running. Listen to music, read, go out with friends. Yeah, travel.
How has your journey, all-encompassing, impacted the way that you're now raising your kids?
Oh, big time.
How?
In many ways. So look, I had a difficult childhood in many ways, emotionally, financially, where I was living in Lebanon, there was war. So I've lived through war, etc. So it wasn't an easy, nice, cruising, childhood. So I try to give my kids the opposite of what I had, the complete opposite of what I had. I try to give them the security, the emotional safety, space for them to think, not to try to direct them too much and tell them what to do. I try to give them agency, help them learn how to have agency. I want them to have great experiences. Again, I didn't have a lot of great experiences, so it did shape my background, my experience did shape a lot. And also, the other interesting thing is I love it when there's an opportunity, when they give me an opportunity to teach them something. When, for example, they want to do, sell bracelets, and I have the opportunity to talk to them about, you know, building a business. And like my son can be the salesman and my daughter is the product person, and where do you think we need to put the bracelet stand and why location is important. So it gives me so much pleasure, you know, whenever I have these opportunities to to try to teach them things that I didn't have the opportunity to learn when I was younger. And I had to learn a lot on my own. And actually, I am so happy that I get to be there for my kids to sort of give them the little insights, the little inspiration here and there, so that they get to be hopefully whoever they want to be.
Do you find that not having any sort of the struggle, though, that not necessarily the struggle that you faced, yeah, is potentially going to rob them from something quite important that you have?
Yeah, that's something I ask myself all the time. I don't give them everything they want. So there is a negotiation that happens. I explain things to them. Look, I think they are capable of making decisions, even at 6 and 8 years old. If you explain to them things, and if you treat them like an adult, like if you respect that they are human beings and not just kids that don't know anything. And this is how I interact with my kids. So I will explain to them, look, if you go out on a play date and, you know, you have a cookie, don't also have a lemonade, because the lemonade is, you know, like full of sugar and it's like not good for you, and you need to balance your food. And so you explain to them, right? And then they can make a decision. They might have that lemonade and they might not have it. So giving them a safe space and being there to guide, but not sort of in an overbearing way, hopefully, I don't think would rob them from trial and error, making mistakes, experiencing things on their own, taking chances, which are, I think, all important, you know, to help you become a more kind of self-reliant, independent person. So, but the only thing I wouldn't do is, you know, put them in harmful situations.
Of course, of course, of course. Look, life is going to hand them the proverbial lemons that we're referring to. I just think that sometimes it's interesting. We talk about wanting to give our kids a better life. Yeah. And that makes complete sense. It's natural. Any parent wants to give their kids the best. Mm. But, you know.
But I don't mean it like financially, by the way. I don't mean it in a materialistic way.
I understand. But. Even safety and stability is a privilege that a lot of people don't have. So that's kind of what I was referring to. In terms of yourself, though, by the way, it's incredible when you talk about your family, how your entire demeanor changes. And when you talk about people, your entire demeanor changes. It's quite beautiful. Do you feel, looking back, Lulu, at your life, your journey, and where you are today, especially in this beautiful, I'm loving your reflections. Guys, if you don't follow her on LinkedIn, please follow her, because I genuinely look forward to reading your reflections on LinkedIn.
Thank you.
Do you feel like you have more of a sense of empathy for Lulu back then? And do you have empathy for the Lulu you're becoming now?
Of course I have empathy for the Lulu back then. I think, actually, I'm quite astonished of what the Lulu of back then has achieved with her life. So I think, again, it didn't come easy. And it was, you know, it was always a, life has always been a challenge. But yes, she did her best and more. Actually, so and here we are today. Definitely, look, you've got to have empathy towards yourself. Otherwise, you can't achieve anything or succeed. And empathy, it doesn't mean cutting yourself slack. It doesn't mean that, you know, I want to build a business, but I spend my day doing things that aren't going to move the needle or aren't necessarily important for building that business. And it's okay. No, that's not okay, because that's wasting my time and slacking off. So no, there's no empathy for that, but there's empathy for sort of making a decision and then, you know, 3 months later realizing, oh, you know what, maybe that wasn't really the right decision, but what can I do? I made the decision and turned out to be the wrong one. So this is where empathy plays a role, in the sense that it's okay, move on. You did your best, you know, you took the decision based on these criteria and it turned out to be not the best decision. Fine, you know. But yeah, so I think there's a fine line between having empathy towards you and the people around you, but also giving yourself a pass way too often.
It's interesting. Even your empathy comes with accountability, Lulu. I want to end this question. I end all my podcasts on a final question where I give the mic proverbially to my guest. And I ask you what you'd want to ask me based on the conversation that we've had today. Is there something you want to ask or you would like me to consider?
What do you look for in people that you bring on your podcast?
That's a great question. I look for another side to the story. I'm very lucky because I feel like people like my show enough to want to ask to come on, which I think is so great. It's a blessing when people want to do that. But genuinely, the people that interest me are people where I feel like there's more to the story that they're telling everyone else. And my intention is never to bring them on the podcast and delve into the nuances of that story. I feel like there are some things that are just simply not my business, but I feel like there's something so powerful and profound in getting glimpses of someone's vulnerability because it makes them that much more human. And somehow seeing that helps me and others feel a little bit more okay with whatever it is that they're going through. And I feel like a lot of people, when they watch the show, they're kind of looking for that. They're looking for the humanity in the nuance of what feels like an everyday conversation, even if it's from someone who, you know, has a beautiful backstory or has incredible accomplishments, someone who has something to say but has a little bit more there to consider.
Great.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Lulu. It was such a pleasure to have you. I feel like you gave us a lot to consider. If anyone from our audience is interested in reaching out to you, what are the best ways to, one, stay in contact with you, or two, follow you and the work you do?
So I am on all social media. The handle is Lulu Khazen, Lulu the French way, which is L-O-U-L-O-U. So you can find me there. And yeah, I think that's the best way to reach me.
By the way, is it Lulu or Lulua?
It's Lulu.
So you were named Lulu.
My name is Lulu.
Yeah, you know, that's my, what, like, inshallah, if I ever get to be a mom, that's what I want to call my daughter.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
There you go.
There I go. All right. To all our listeners, I want to thank you as always for the privilege of your time. If you enjoyed the conversation, please don't forget to follow on whatever channel you are listening to it on. And I hope that you found something to consider.